As you watch the screen, your heart begins to beat faster. There's a fluttering in the pit of your stomach. Your throat is dry. Your palms damp. Suddenly a chill runs down your spine. You clutch the person next to you. You tell yourself, it's only a movie. It's only a movie. But sooner or later, it's time to go home.
Shock to bear.
Welcome to Film Strip. In the next installment of our 2023 Shocktober Festival, I'm Ron.
I'm Jay.
I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Anthony.
We'll get to Anthony in a moment, but first, we're here to talk about Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Starring Grant Kramer, Suzanne Snyder, John Alan Nelson, John Vernon, Michael S. Siegel, Peter Lucchese, Royal Dano, who I believe is Paul Dano's father.
And I did not know that.
And Christopher Titus. If you remember Christopher Titus, he was all over Comedy Central in like 2001. Anyway, written, directed, produced, and Clownzilla special effects by the brilliant Chiodos brothers. Released in 1998 on a budget of $1.8 million, it grossed a staggering $43 million at the box office and remains constantly in the discussion for future sequels, prequels, TV series, spinoffs, and other assorted cash-ins. So the
video games.
Video games, yes. And so the Chiodos have made good money off of this movie because people keep buying the rights and then letting the rights lapse. So Killer Clowns remains one of the best-looking horror comedies of the 80s, and it's full of some brilliant special effects. Headed up by some of the masters of the makeup genre, and Charles Edward and Stephen Chiodo. It also has one of the best title songs of any movie of the 80s, courtesy of one of my favorite bands, the Dickies. Jay, let's start with you. What's your background for this?
This was one of those things that my friends and I were like, on the playground on Monday, you talked about what your parents let you rent on Friday, because as a Gen Xer, nobody gave a damn what you watched. And so you could just rent anything. And somebody told me about this bonkers movie, and I thought, there's no way on earth I'm ever going to be able to sneak and watch this or even convince anybody to let me watch it.
All right, stop right here.
What?
I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. There's no reason for us to do this movie here tonight. Terrifier. Let's do it. 1, 2, 3, 4. This is a little trickery we're pulling on friend of the show, Anthony, best known for seeing every movie possible in theaters and being the biggest Terrifier booster of anyone.
Wait, are we really doing Terrifier?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, as a treat to him, I decided to surprise him with the opportunity to talk about the only clown he cares about that he doesn't also host a podcast with, Art the Clown, star of the movie Terrifier. But first, let me give you the background. Starring Jennifer Connell, Mike Samantha Scafidi, David Howard Thornton, and Catherine Corcoran. Released in 2016 on a budget of $35,000, it grossed $76,000 at the box office in Russia and nowhere else because it basically got stuck in the festival circuit for 2 years before being picked up by Dread Central in 2018. Written and directed by Damien Leone, it finally got a theatrical release in July 2023, where it promptly racked up $292,000 in a very limited release in the United States and spawned an incredibly successful sequel and a third movie. So, Anthony, surprise, surprise, this is your baby, so take a big bite out of it. What is your background with Terrifier?
Well, can I just say, well played, all three of you, because I was so confused when you invited me on this show and it was Killer Clowns from Outer Space. I was like, is it just because I liked the other clown? I don't know why I was asked down for this one. I literally spent my afternoon after work today watching this movie, so thank you guys.
Well, we'll eventually have you back on to do actual Killer Clowns from Outer Space since we made
you. You know what? Just have me on for all the horror clowns. I'm in.
Yes. We've already done it.
Both versions?
Yeah, both versions.
Okay, so. Well, Killer Clowns next time. So Terrifier, I was aware of Art the Clown before the movie. His image has somehow seeped into pop culture and was showing up on like horror and Halloween pages and social media. And I was like, this guy looks cool. This guy looks like a scary clown. I wonder what movie he's from. So I crowdsourced it on Facebook, like, hey, has anyone seen Terrifier? Is it any good? And people said yes. So I was like, cool, I'll watch it. And I did. And I fell in love with it right away. It's a throwback to 80s cheap slashers. And I loved that about it. I loved the randomness about it. The scariest horror films in my mind, like The Strangers and Halloween, before they ruined it by making Laurie Michael's sister, are when an evil, it's random evil. And that's exactly what this movie is. And I love that. I love it. So.
Well, you're not the only one who loved it, because apparently lots of people are talking about it. It actually comes from I believe it was 2013, he made an anthology movie of short films, all starring some sort of murder clown. And it was a different guy playing Art the Clown back then. But this guy who plays it now, David Howard Thornton.
It was called All Hallows Eve, and it was awful.
Yes, awful. Seconded. Yeah. And not Trick or Treat is not that good.
He wasn't even like the main through line. He was just added as an afterthought, I think, to connect the stories. But that movie was off.
Well, Jay, do you have any background with Terrifier?
Yeah, Anthony wouldn't stop talking about this on social media. So I'm like, okay, you know what? This guy's pretty solid. So I'll give this a shot. And once again, Tubi, my friend Tubi, had Terrifier on, and I popped it on just one random Thursday night or something, and just sat there going like, yeah, this is totally a throwback, while also being like the coolest Saw / Hostel sequel that we never got, you know? So it sort of falls in that same realm. And every now and then I want to go down that bucket. And I appreciate practical effects and corn syrup. And, you know, I'm all about the corn syrup lobby. And so, I thought it was funny, and I had a good time with it. And I thought, okay, yeah, I get it now. And so when Terrifier 2 came out and I saw the box office returns on it and stuff, I was like, well, they're definitely doing a 3. So I'm not going to watch 2 until 3 comes out, because what's the point? Because I know at some point I'm going to have to do all of them, and I'm going to have to do them with Anthony. So I might as well just save them until then. So they've been kind of in my queue to watch again. But when Ron pitched this idea, I was 100% like, oh, yes, we must totally trick Anthony and waste 2 hours of his life watching a movie he doesn't want to watch to get to the one that he does. And to be fair, we did check with your podcast co-host to say, can he just do this off the fly? And they're like, oh, yeah, totally. So
they were in on it?
Tom was totally in on this. So, yeah. So,
of course he was.
Yeah, the fact that we kept this much a secret between all of us is pretty amazing. But no, I saw it. But again, I like Terrifier, and I watched it again, and I had a good time with it. And but, you know, I also am not effusive with it. I think there's stuff about it that I'm like, I don't know if that really works or not. But again, I kind of figure it's probably stuff they fix in Terrifier 2, because they actually have money. Anyway, we'll get there. But yeah, that's my background with it. It's mostly I watched it because Anthony kept talking about it.
I will say, when Terrifier 2 came out and I went opening night to see it in theaters, I did not expect it to be sold out. It was like limited release at the time. And it was exactly the type of crowd in that theater you would expect to see that movie opening night. That's all I'll say.
That's smart, though, to do limited release.
I felt kind of scared, honestly.
That's smart to do something limited release with like a cult classic like that, because then you guaranteed the audience, you know. So it's almost as good as doing like, you know, Christian murder porn, which is also apparently big at the box office these days. But anyway.
Did you say Christian murder porn?
Murder porn. There's one of those out right now. We won't talk about that, but yeah.
Okay. We'll expand on that later. I'm curious to know.
I was excited because, like, oh, they did a Sound in the Fury movie? No, it's not William Faulkner. It's Sound of something else.
Sound of Freedom.
That would have been a movie where, you know, 25 minutes of it is somebody talking about a sandwich. But anyway. So that's for all my English major friends out there.
Okay, Lindsay, do you have any background with Terrifier?
I don't. I have zero background except for watching it today to prep for this after we decided to pull this little prank. So yeah, that's it. That's my background. I have seen the Art the Clown photos circulated through the interwebs, though. So I guess I just never put two and two together. I have some friends actually from high school who do like horror photography specifically. And I see a lot of stuff that they post, and I'm pretty sure her feed is where I saw Art the Clown for the first time. But yeah, this was the first time I ever actually saw the movie.
And as for me, my background is putting together this plan to prank Anthony in a positive way. Hopefully it's a good, pleasant surprise prank and not the bad kind of prank.
As the resident old here, I got to quote Sheriff Brackett. Yeah, you know, it's Halloween. Everybody's entitled to one good scare.
Nice. Well, evil dies tonight, unlike at the end of this movie.
Unless it doesn't. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very pleased with myself for having pulled this off and having asked several people like that I know Anthony talks to, like Tom, like my wife Holly. I met with people even before I pitched it to Jay and Lindsay to like, is this going to be mean or will he love it? And they were like, oh yes, he's going to love it. And then Tom was like, dude, yeah, you have to do this. I could look up his text right now and tell you he was extremely like pleased by the thought of me doing this, putting this one over on you, Anthony. So
of course he is.
However, well,
it's Art the Clown week for me because I'm covering Terrifier 2 with Julia on Wednesday. So
see, there you go. So.
Yeah, that's why he was like, oh yeah, he will have no problem doing this. So, however, to piss you off the entire time, I will probably just call him Terrifier the whole time because I follow the rule of Malignant. Malignant is the name of the monster in Malignant. Orphan is the name of the girl in Orphan. His name is It the Clown. That's how these things work. You name the movie after the bad guy.
And look, Michael Myers in the David Gordon Green trilogy is just referred to as the Halloween because that's pretty much what he is.
Yeah, and all those movies about the summer camp murderer guy are called the Jasons. So the Jasons and Freddy's and Michael Myers's, except for David Gordon Green, which are the Halloweens. You know, that's just how these things work.
It's like, I want to bring up that
Sleepaway Camp.
That somehow this podcast has existed for 13 years, and Ron, you've been on it for about 9 or 10 of those, and we still haven't done Sleepaway Camp. And I don't know how that's escaped us, but we're going to fix that next summer because everybody on this podcast has done summer camp at some point. So we're gonna work through that. Yeah, that's a promise. So
okay, but speaking of promises, I promised Jay that I would do the plot summary. So let's roll.
Good luck. That's what I was thinking of my text to you. Like, yeah, you got this one.
is there a plot?
Well, sort of. There is the skeleton of a plot, which is fitting because this is a very Halloween centric movie because, you know, skeletons are spooky and Terrifier the Clown is very scary. But we open up with a horribly disfigured woman being interviewed by a talk show host discussing how she is the sole survivor of a massacre that took place the previous Halloween. That killer, Art the Clown, disappeared from the morgue, but the woman insists, "I saw him die." However, as we all know, you can't keep a good serial murderer down. And a man, watching from some suspiciously dingy warehouse, angrily kicks his TV and starts filling up a garbage bag full of related weapons. Uh-oh. Meanwhile, the disfigured woman hears the talk show host mocking her, gets enraged, and gouges the talk show host's eyes out while laughing maniacally. Now, Maniacal Laughter is probably my second favorite Bouncing Souls album, but we're not going to get into that right now. I'm going to save it for Tom's podcast. Halloween night, Tara and Dawn are drunkenly stumbling out of a party and stop off for a slice of dollar pizza at the Diarrhea Hut. However, a weirdo dressed like a clown follows them into the pizza place, sits down, and keeps making eyes at Tara. Eventually, the owner of the pizza place tells him to forget about it and throws him out. Now, sober-ish, after a run-in with a creep and some cheap carbs, the girls head back to their car only to see that one of their tires has been flattened. Uh-oh again. Tara calls her sister Vicky to come get them, and they decided to wait in the car while Art goes back to the pizza place to butcher the owner and the poor guy who had to clean up a metric ton of poop from the bathroom. Apparently, that's why Art got thrown out. Tara has to pee because drinking, and she talks to a pest control guy named Mike who takes pity on her and doesn't make her go squat behind a car. She runs into a weirdo cat lady who talks to a doll like it's a real baby. And shout out to any fans who remember Britain the Doll of Reddit fame from like 6 or 7 years ago. I may be the only one who remembers that, but that's fine.
Art grabs Dawn from
her car. I remember that too. Well played.
I'm glad someone brought Tookies to the podcast. Smash to Tara wandering around where she runs into Art. He attacks her, subdues her with a sedative, and ties her to a chair. Upon waking, Tara gets to watch her friend Dawn get carved up from asshole to appetite by Art using the world's most powerful hacksaw. If I had a hacksaw blade that powerful, I would rule the world with it. Or just, you know, be able to get chores done more efficiently. Tara escapes and whacks Art with a board, and then he pulls out a gun and shoots her, which came out of nowhere and probably made me laugh more than anything else in the movie. The cat lady sees this, runs to Mike, and begs him to call the police. He dismisses her and gets hit with a hammer for his troubles. I guess Art is team believe all women. The cat lady finds Art cradling her doll and takes pity on him, showing him a mother's love by cuddling him, which is probably a bad idea. Vicky the sister arrives, only to be lured into the building by Art. She finds him wearing the scalp and breasts of Cat Lady. A chase ensues, but Art gets distracted by Mike's co-worker showing up. Art decapitates him, very slowly, then goes back to Vicky. Vicky escapes him, but then finds her sister's Tara's corpse and she has a meltdown, allowing Art to beat her with a Cat of Nine Tails, Passion of the Christ style, before Mike, who it turns out is not dead yet, knocks Art unconscious and calls the cops. Cops take their sweet-ass time, allowing Art to revive and stomp Mike to death like an extra from The Walking Dead. Vicky sneaks away and hides in a garage, but Art crashes through the doors of Mike's stolen truck, and another thing that made me laugh, and runs her over. While she's out, Art presumably snorts a bunch of Florida Man's bath salts and starts eating her face. Cops arrive, but Art shoots himself in the head. Vicky lives. But at what cost? Art and his kills are taken to a morgue where the medical examiner unzips that special bag. Lots of crazy shit happens. Art sits up like the Undertaker and strangles the guy to death, much like the way Kane Hodder strangled me for a picture one time. 1 year later, Vicky is released from the hospital for her television appearance. We wrap all the way around to our original framing device. Neat. As credits roll.
That's longer than the fucking movie, man.
Well done.
But yes, well done. Well done. Wow. I mean, this is the second time in this iteration of Shocktober where $35,000 has produced a lot to talk about. I mean, y'all, that we got a theme going here this year. We're going to blow it when we get to something that's got an actual budget.
Wait, are we going to get to something that has an actual budget?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure one Scooby Bark tease, it costs more than 35 grand, but yeah.
That's fair. I forgot about that one.
Yeah,
35. Ginger Snaps might have only been 75. I'm not sure yet. We'll see.
Jay's just spoiling all of our shots.
I mean, whatever. Nobody, it's fine. If you've been listening to the show this long and you're subscribed to Hanging In, you deserve it.
Oh, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
All right. So, with that out of the way, what did everybody think about this? We'll come back around to it, but what did everybody think about this initial framing device? That disfigurement makeup is awesome looking.
Yeah, no, look, I had flashbacks to like the best or some of the best parts of Brandon Cronenberg's Possessor. If you see like when that the sort of face distortions they do in that movie, which if you haven't seen that movie, every one of you, that's homework right now. And everybody listening too. But yeah, I love facial distortion stuff, and I think it's because I saw The Wall very early on as a kid, and sort of, you know, all of Pink Floyd's action and stuff like that. It stuck in my head. Like I was into that. And I think I conflate some of that with the Land of Illusion puppet video that Genesis did or whatever. Oof. But yeah, you know, but I mean, I love a good face melt or whatever as it is. And I'm always down for that. And when you scar the person and they can't get away from it, you know, I'll stand for Tom Cruise and Vanilla Sky the same way, you know, all that kind of stuff. I just love,
you know, all this talk about face melt makes me want to make you watch The Stuff, Jay.
Oh, I love The Stuff. Anytime. You don't have to have an excuse. I'm all about The Stuff. So
rock and roll.
Yeah,
the makeup was genuinely uncomfortable to look at very long, which I appreciated. It was really cool, and they actually improve upon it in the second one. But I loved this whole framing device where we take place in the present, but the whole movie takes place in the past. I did not pick up on that the first time I was watching it. And I was like, wow, that was actually pretty cool. They got me.
Yeah, same. I marked for that too. I did not see that coming. So
I didn't see it coming. This was my first time. And at the end, I was like, oh, that makes sense.
That's the reaction I had. It's the same exact reaction.
But yeah. So I was watching this movie and I'll like jot down random thoughts that I have while I was watching it. And there was one point I was probably 3/4 of the way through. And I thought, how come the beginning scene has absolutely nothing to do with the rest of the movie, but it's still my favorite scene so far? And then when it came back to the very end, I was like, oh, now it makes sense. I should have seen that coming. I don't know where my head was at. I was not in the right mind frame.
No, I totally get it, because I'm the same way. Because when Dawn, I think is the character, uploads a picture of her and Art to Instagram, I'm like, didn't this guy commit a massacre like a year ago and nobody's calling it out on her picture? Like, she still got a picture with this guy. So, yeah, it got me. It got me.
Yeah.
See, I just thought it might have been possibly like one of those, clown murderer costumes. Like, you know how in all the Halloween movies, everybody's dressed like Michael Myers?
Right. Or in the Scream movies, it's just Father Death. You know, the early ones. Yeah. So, no, I'm with you. So,
yeah, this is just pale clown murderer, the costume, like at Walmart.
Oh no, man, you're degrading Walmart. This is straight up from the Dollar General, bro. Like this is much cheaper than Walmart stuff. Walmart stuff's expensive these days.
Be that as it may, can we talk about how cool he looks? I think it's a cool design. I think he looks creepy. I like how thin and angular he is, and like, yeah, I've made the argument before, if he had a better movie, he would be more of an icon. Like,
it's a mix of things. It's a mix of like Pennywise, but with like new Nightmare Freddy's teeth, you know,
plus then, a little Buffalo Bill mixed in there.
Yes, Buffalo Bill and a little bit of like Jigsaw meets Hostel. Like
that's, Jigsaw, yeah. He was riding that little tricycle at one point.
Yes. I said the same thing.
Jigsaw vibes, yep.
Yes, I was like, oh, we're just ripping off all of it. Well, cool, I'm down for that. I
mean, his face, like his cheeks kind of look like the puppet face from Saw.
You know what I got off of that, Ron? I got one of the Puppet Master puppets off of that a little bit. Like, there's a little bit of that angular
Six Shooter.
Yeah. Or one of the ones from Littlest Reich, whichever. But yeah, it's kind of the same diff, you know? It's the knife one. Yeah. I love that. I love that angular thing. Well, there's also, like, he's got this sinister grin, too. And y'all, this is a deep dive, but it's the wacky preacher from Poltergeist 2. There's a little bit of that going on too.
Yes.
You know, he's got 100%. The whole world in his hands, and I also have your liver, you know, or whatever. Like, it's very, the only thing though, and this is the thing I wanted to ask you, Anthony, like, I expected at some point Art to like start talking or singing or doing something, because not all clowns are mimes. And I kind of wonder why they decided to not do voice, and don't spoil it if they do it in the future, but I kind of wanted him to like say words at some point.
I like that they don't, because Pennywise talks and, you know, it makes him different. I think it's creepier that he doesn't talk, even when he's screaming in pain, when he's in pain or laughing, there's just no sound whatsoever. And I find that creepier. But
he's
his makeup
been the voice in a couple of children's shows.
What? Love it.
Just here and there. Spotty, but
I mean, get work where you can, actors. Yeah. I'm with you. Yes, but wow.
I'm so here one for of my- it, but maybe that's why. Maybe he has a children's show-esque voice.
One of my friends actually went on a few dates with him years ago in New York City.
Wow.
Before he became Art the Clown, and she was like, yeah, kind of glad it didn't work because I couldn't date him after. But they're still friends, apparently. Yeah. But
The thing he's got going, though, is the same thing that like Nightmare's got going with Freddy, because with Jason and Michael and all the, you know, and maybe a little bit Child's Play too, it's at least the same like voice or same actor playing Freddy, Art, and Chucky every time. Whereas the other ones, it's just the different stuntmen that they throw in, you know, and they all kind of have a personality. And now Kane Hodder definitely has his own sort of personality and stuff, but I like the fact that he's sort of continuing this. But that's why I kind of wanted him to have a voice, because I put him more in league with Chucky, a little bit of later Freddy, and no offense, a little bit of Leprechaun too, which I will stand for some of those goofy Leprechaun movies. They're fun, you know, and so I kind of, he's in that same pile.
That's a great observation, because I agree, like, you can get anyone to put on the Michael mask or the Jason mask, but just like only Robert Englund can really do Freddy. Like, this guy, not everyone can do these facial expressions or exaggerated movements. Like, if you go back to All Hallows Eve, when he wasn't playing Art the Clown, not only is the makeup not there, he's very round and not angular at all, but the guy's just not as good. So I think they recast him because the original guy retired, but blessing in disguise, honestly.
I feel like at some point, and I don't know enough about his background to, you know, say whether or not he did this, but the way he moved his face, especially with the prosthetics on there, he must have done mask work at some point in time. I feel like because he was so good at moving his mouth, and I don't know, well, I'm on video, I have a mask like right there behind me, and it's, I don't know, there's a certain way you move your face. So either he was directed really well or he had prior experience, but he did a great job at that.
So I got a question about that, as you brought it up, Lindsay, because I was going to ask, like, what is it like as an actor to have to do and give a performance where you have no dialogue and everything is just exaggerated movement, but you can't be too exaggerated? How do you do that? How do you find that?
Some actors thrive in that environment, honestly. They love it. I've worked with many who really, really enjoy that piece because it's all body work. And so sometimes in like bigger productions, you'll have movement coaches and things like that to help you get to where you need to be, since there aren't actual, you know, there's no lines to work with. But I think for, and I won't speak for all actors, but I know that this is true for many, and that it's a way to explore a way of embodying a character that you don't often get the opportunity to explore. So it's a challenge, but it also is, you know, you're not hung up on the script. You can just fully be, this sounds so woo-woo, you can like fully be the character and really embody it. So he was weird in like the best way, and all of his, you were, Anthony, I think you mentioned like his, someone said that he was just thin and angular and that's just his body type, but he really used it to, especially in some of those, the Buffalo Bill scene especially. But like, he really used it, and he was just so weird, and it worked. He made it work really well.
He definitely has some mask work in his background, because he played Grandpa Who in like 5 national tours of Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the musical. So he's definitely had some weird facial appliances on to do, you know, Seuss stuff.
Yeah, for
and,
sure.
And yeah, he has a very his face, like his out of character face, makes me think of Peter Weller. Like,
I can see that.
Ooh, yeah.
He's got that kind of Peter Weller, like, I would like to see this guy do RoboCop if they do another ill-fated RoboCop recast.
Hey, do not speak ill of Joel Kinnaman. That movie's fine. It's just not Verhoeven's brilliance.
I like that movie. I love Jackie Earle Haley. I'll watch Jackie Earle Haley in anything.
Same. His whole like 10-man smack talk action, I'm down for that. Much better than his friggin' Freddy, I'll tell you that much. So to bring it back to Nightmare on Elm Street. But no, Liz, I'm glad you explained it that way, though, because it makes so much more sense now to just think about like the process that this guy's going through, because again, I mean, this movie's kind of thin, you know, like again, Ron's plot is much deeper than most of what you see. And that's fine, because I don't think, I think good horror movies don't have to be, you know, friggin' 2001 A Space Odyssey. Like I don't need that necessarily. I don't need Inception, you know, or Tenet to watch a horror movie. I need something that's just going to be visceral. And this movie is an interesting balance of unnerving like tension and then just all out splatter, you know, which is a hard balance to make. And so Anthony, I wanted to ask you, like, can you think of other movies that have balanced it that well? Because like the original Saw comes to my mind is like one that does it, and a couple of the sequels, but that first one in particular.
Yeah, the original Saw, you mentioned Hostel before, that one comes to mind. I'm trying to think what else. I'm sure lots in the 70s and 80s. I can't think of any though.
Yeah, I could. One of the things that I find interesting about this whole about the whole movie is it's so thin, but like Joe Bob Briggs has a saying, don't let the plot get in the way of the good story. And I feel like that this is more story than plot. In that way, it kind of feels almost like it feels a little bit like a hallucination at times. Like we're in the head of like Tara or Dawn or whoever, and is just kind of seeing this crazy stuff happen in front of them. And it's so, it toes that line of like, almost like a phantasm, kind of that kind of phantasmagorical, you know, weirdness.
It almost feels to me like it's a short story. Like we're not coming in on the full movie. It's like a chapter in a book, like a very, like we're not getting the full background or what happens after with this movie. It's just a very singular part, like one, what happens in this 1 to 2 hour period this evening. But that's what makes it scary to me, like the randomness of it. Like these girls were not like targeted by Art the Clown. Like it was just a chance encounter, and this drunken girl called out to him and he just fixated on them. And that's terrifying, because I'm sure, I mean, I'm not a woman, Lindsay, you can say this, like drunken guy, like girls, like you do have to deal with creepy guys all the time, especially after nights out. And yeah, I don't know. It just felt real to me in that sense. Like, Damien Leone, who wrote this and directed this, said he came up with the idea of Art the Clown as a short story to begin with. He pictured a girl on a late night bus, like the last bus out of the city, and a clown gets on and sits opposite her on this empty bus. And it starts out fine enough. He's making her laugh and everything, but gets more and more aggressive and scary as she starts rejecting his advances. And I'm like, that type of shit can happen in, that type of shit does happen all the time to women. And I think that's what makes art really scary.
Yeah. Pepper spray ladies.
it kind of pepper spray. Has anyone else other than Anthony, I'm sure, seen Midnight Meat Train?
Yeah. 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 Or Bradley Cooper's better performances, by the way. I'll just low key say that, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it is one of the best things he's ever done. And it reminded me, Terrifier reminded me quite a bit of Midnight Meat Train, because like later on in the movie we get the part where the cat lady goes to the exterminator and she's like, look, there's this crazy white faced clown and he's killing all these people and blah blah blah, and he's like, you just lost your marbles, lady. And it kind of makes me think of like how everybody thinks Bradley Cooper's kind of unwinding in Midnight Meat Train.
Well, can I say this too? And I don't know if they'll ever admit to it, but the people that made Scream 6 clearly ripped off this train scene, but did it badly, because it's so much better here. Like, it's what that train scene should have been and wasn't. And I'll save that for my Scream 6 hate later down the line someday. But if you follow me on Letterboxd, and most of you don't, but you should, you'll know what I think of that movie. But no, I loved that about it. And I felt like I was watching Dylan Baker a little bit from Trick or Treat, if y'all remember his segments in that or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, so evilly, normally unnerving he could be, even though Art is very much, you know, a different world or everybody played it the same way. It's like, yes, I'm dressed like this freak, but I'm just going to be very like, you know, just, I'm just going to be like Looney Tunes about it. And
very Harpo Marx.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, Ron. That, thank you for tying it together. It's very Marx. I think what I now have realized is since you introduced the Marx Madness to us several Marxes ago, that everybody has ripped off the Marx Brothers for 100 damn years now. And that's pretty much it. But no, there's a lot of that in this. And it plays so well. And I want to go back to something you said earlier, though, like this could be somebody's dream. Like, rewatching it this time, I'm like, are we just like basically hearing Vicky's recounting of everything that she noticed? So maybe we're not even getting the full experience, and this is how distorted it already is. Like, that's just where my mind went.
Really interesting. It ties back to the interview from beginning. It's like Lindsay, I was blindsided by that because this was my first viewing of the movie. But the more I think about it, and the more, you know, Jay brings up all those good points, the more I was like, yeah, I feel like this is like a secondhand story almost. And then when Vicky shows up, it seems there's a lot more detail or a lot more specificity. So she's like, these are the things that happened to me. And this is just kind of what I figured out, or what the police have said about the rampage earlier.
I've never thought of it that way, but I like that interpretation. I'm gonna make that headcanon in my mind then.
Awesome. All right, so at the pizza place, the pizza, I made fun of it, but it actually looked kind of good. Kind of made me want some pizza.
It made me think of Ron, the House of the Devil pizza that we saw our actors. Greta Gerwig was in that scene as well, of Barbie fame now, but it made me think of that pizza scene from that incredible movie.
I have a question for you guys, since we're on the pizza scene. What do you think of these two actresses in general? The, like, not Vicky. We have Dawn, and we have, is it Tina? Something like that.
Tara,
that's it.
Tara.
I mean, haven't seen a lot of horror movies. They're kind of, you know, Friday the 13th, 3 to 7 level. Like, they sort of file in that. They could be, like, third level Dream Warriors in a Nightmare series. They're okay. I mean, Vicky's kind of like the sister in Child's Play 2, maybe, you know, but like that's about it. That's where I come down on it as a horror fan.
I feel like if this movie had been made in the 80s, Tara would have had some big fake breast implants. And that would be, why she would be cast for the movie.
But she had like a Nev Campbell
Girl Next Door thing going on.
Kind of what I was,
excuse me. Dawn would have had the big fake breast implants, the blonde.
Oh, yeah. Dawn for Tara, sure would have had the
Tara is heavily coded as Final Girl. And then we get the psycho switch, like midway through the movie.
I loved that switch, by the way. I was like, what? Who are we following now?
I felt like it was what they, and it's in the first Nightmare movie, but it's heavy in the remake in 2010. Like, Katie Cassidy should have been the final girl in that movie because Rooney Mara sucks in that movie. Yeah. And she hated being there. Katie wanted to have a good time. But you sort of see it's the Tina Nancy switch. It's the same thing. So at least, as a horror fan, I'm watching this with all of that knowledge going like, oh, we're just playing that beat again. And on one level, I'm like, oh, that's annoying. But then I'm like, no, you know what? If you're going to steal from the good stuff, because I like pop music and it all just borrows from itself anyway. So I'm down for that. I thought it was a good time.
I did. Yeah. And when the switch happened, I agree with you, Ron. When Art pulls out that Glock and shoots Tara to death, I'm like, whoa.
Okay. So now you've crossed a line that I'm going to go ahead and pick the bone. I'm like, okay.
Please pick it. I have a bone to pick there, too.
Thank you. I'm hot tagging you in. We're doing the double move right now. Okay. When you give the murder clown a fucking gun, you change the game. I know. No. The Scream made the gun play work for a slasher movie. Like, most slashers cannot pull that off. But if Jason picked up a shotgun, we're all super fucked. All right? So, like, that... No. Like, that is not... I do not want gunplay in my horror movie. Lindsay, you're hot tagged it.
I'm with you. I was so, I wasn't mad about Tara dying. That was a fun twist. But when he brought the gun out, it totally just, so if this was more of a comedy, that would have worked beautifully. I would have been here for that. That would have been perfection. But I did not read this movie as a comedy, really. Not up to that point. And I was just like, that is, it feels wrong. It feels like you are going, it's not natural to have a gun in a slasher movie. It's wrong. It goes against all the rules.
So I do agree with you in that sense, both of you in that sense. It does go against real slasher movies, but don't you feel like, not to add realism to this, but don't you feel like in real life, if this guy would have a backup plan in case this girl tried to get away?
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah, sure. But like as a slasher movie, what I wanted it to be was one of those prop guns that stuck out like a little arrow, like Wile E. Coyote, and said bang, and then you stabbed her in the face with it. Like that I would have bought. Like
I would have because he had like the honky thing, the horn.
He clown jokes. Like, do the freaking clown joke. Like the fact that he blows her away, I'm like, well. Damn, did y'all just run out of ideas? Like,
I appreciated the character's acting ability. How he was on the floor pretending he couldn't get up, and then he does a boom.
I mean, it's everybody's trying to replay Harrison Ford shooting that guy in Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark because he had to go to the bathroom or whatever. Like, everybody tried to replay that beat for 40 friggin' years. Even that series has, and they've never got it right again because you can't catch your magic like that. And yeah, Rod, you were trying to get in on that. So are you team gun or team no?
I'm team gun because it surprised me.
We're getting the dusty finish tonight. I see,
so. Yeah, no, this was great. I'm team gun because I was like, well, that's unexpected. And it literally made me laugh out loud. I laughed for like 3 minutes at my desk at work. I had to leave, go outside and laugh.
What kind of VPN do you have at work to be able to watch this at work, dude? Wow. Are you hiring?
I was watching it at work too.
Again, are you hiring?
No, it was on my phone. It was on my phone.
I had to get up early this morning to watch this, miss.
Well, if you'd use your phone like a normal person.
Well, I know my phone's still on the dang campus network. So anyway. So no, I think that's interesting. Okay, Anthony, so Ron's on your side. So do tell us why you're on the gun side besides just the surprise of it.
Well, I'm on the gun side because it felt like he was digging into his Harpo Marx overcoat, his garbage bag, his Harpo's hammer space. So anything he needed at the time, he could pull it out of the garbage bag.
Cooler if he pulled out like a rubber chicken and beat her to death with it or something. Like that would have been funny at least. Like if you're gonna do goofy, do goofy. You
know? I mean, he's very resourceful. He literally drives a car into Victoria later on.
That's another thing that made me really laugh because
okay, I did
bebopping. He was jamming to some tunes that was good.
I so needed that to be an American Psycho moment. They had some fucking Bill Collins play it or like Huey Lewis or something. Like I needed that to complete the circle, you know. So I mean, this movie didn't have any money, so they could have got some trickster or maybe some low rent winger, you know, something.
They could have gotten the other song from The Fix.
There we go. Well, yeah, there we go. So. That's a killer needle drop, and it's again, the whole reason why that's there is amazing. So
that and one of my long gestating article ideas that I've never gotten around to doing or trying to sell to someone is best horror movie needle drops using real songs.
You need to do that, man.
That's awesome.
That's an incredible idea. I'll help you do the research on that.
Between that and the aforementioned The Strangers with the Gillian Welch song.
Oh, God. Someday we need to get around to that one, too, because that movie just messes with my head in all kinds of ways, man. And I'm an old dude. Nobody's going to come do that to me. But like the fact that you got fucking Tara from Buffy to be that person, holy cow. The nicest person on that show in the history of ever. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's that movie still creeps me out.
It doesn't pay to be a nice person in the movie because as we see what happens to the cat lady.
Yeah, right.
That's one of the more uncomfortable scenes in the movie for me is not even the part where he's Buffalo Billing around in her
her scalp and bits
mm-hmm. but the part where she's hugging him made me very uncomfortable.
It was very uncomfortable when she's like, did you ever have a mother's love? Like it seemed to even take him by surprise, for that would seem to be the only moment in the movie he seemed surprised by something somebody said.
There was some Black Christmas 2006 shit going on in that moment, y'all, and a little Sleepaway Camp too, to call that back. And I was like, "Oh, we're going in all kinds of directions here." So that I did not expect this little low rent movie to go. So
I will admit, though, no matter how many times I watch this movie, I cannot figure out the space of this building.
It's endless. Like it's like a friggin' it's like the Saw 3 trap. It's like there's no warehouse.
It's a maze in there. It's a maze.
There's no way.
It's just
every
liminal
door
space.
Is somehow locked from both sides.
Right. Like the elaborate planning that takes is beyond the pale. You know.
Yeah.
As someone who's used storage facilities for many years, I promise you they're not that secure.
Well, my understanding is this feels very New Jersey to me. It feels like
it's Staten Island.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That explains a lot. That explains number one, the pizza. Number two, the big, the warehouse district. Number three, the aggressive rats that we see later in the movie, and also the fact that they lock it up from both sides to keep squatters out.
Okay, I was like,
this doesn't feel very New Jersey to me.
Me either.
New Jersey.
Yeah.
I live in New York and work in New Jersey, and yeah, it didn't feel any.
It doesn't feel Jersey enough, but yeah.
Nor did it feel populated at all, which I know is a budget, but like these two girls came from a Halloween party, and they were literally the only ones on the street.
Did they shoot this in scene, or was this like, you know, Vancouver light, you know, doubling four at this point? Did they shoot this in Jersey or New York? Because I didn't look it up, but
I think he actually did shoot it in Staten Island.
Oh, so what we're saying is he bowfingered this because there's no way he had like license to do any of this. So that's why there's nobody on the street. They did it at like 4 a.m.
You don't need license to shoot in public, Jay. You can just do it.
Note to self.
There's no expectation of privacy.
Note to self. I'll remember that the next time I want to try to shoot a movie. But I was going to ask you too about the scenery in this because I felt the same way. Like it's been a while since I've been in New York, but I've never seen it that unpopulated at any time at all. Like in that part of the world, there's people everywhere. That's the point.
Terrifier 2 was mostly filmed in New Jersey.
Okay. So, I mean, wouldn't that be kind of the joke, though? Isn't that the running joke of New York? Is that you can flat murder somebody in the street and nobody cares? Nobody's going to listen or look? You know,
it depends on where you are.
Okay, fair.
In New York or Philly, I think, for that matter. But
For sure, Philly.
But well, yeah.
Certain 100%. Former presidents would say they could shoot someone in Fifth Avenue and get away with it.
Yeah, well, as history has proven, that was a lie, Mari Povich.
Anthony's right. Terrifier confirmed, filmed in New York City and Staten Island.
Okay, so I'm impressed. They actually filmed on location, something that the frigging Friday the 13th people with Paramount money couldn't buy. But anyway, I digress.
Filmed it like 3:30 a.m. in the dregs of like back alley.
That's the tradition. That's how you shoot in New York on no budget, right? You shoot in the middle of the night. That's what they did in Basket Case, and they had Bilal's brother running naked through Central Park or whatever. Because they could do it in the middle of winter at 4 a.m.
That explains so much at that point.
So, yeah. I have a question for you guys. Because the scene everybody talks about from this movie is when he saws Dawn in half.
Yeah, the hostel. The hostel scene, basically. Yeah.
What did y'all think of that moment?
Well, first of all, we knew Don was dying because she booped him in the pizza restaurant.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That shit was happening. We knew
which was fantastic acting on his part, just the way his smile disappears and his eyes just like move to stare at her.
Yeah.
Good. I liked it.
Yeah. I thought it was good. Here's my thing with pretty much every elaborate murder in this movie. I feel like, and I am not a doctor, but I feel like people are alive. Wait,
you're not a doctor?
I'm not. I'm sorry to disappoint.
Hey. Gotta cancel my appointment now.
I thought I was talking to a medical professional here tonight.
I am in no way a medical professional. I feel like people are alive way longer than they should be through these, I don't know what you would call them, maimings and massacrings. Because at that point, he'd saw it all the way up to like her neck and she was still trying to talk.
Yeah, I feel like you go into shock once it gets past your nethers, you know, with the hacksaw.
And I watched a lot of Game of Thrones, and I'm pretty sure that no one has talked through like a flaying.
Right. Yeah. You know? Like, I was watching this and that scene in particular, and I'm like, okay, so I know what we're going for. This is where we're really going to gore it out. We're going for all of it right here. And I think it would have shocked me more if I didn't feel like that the inspiration for this was a whole lot of Rob Zombie, whose belief in effects is let me do something and just do it again. And for 25 minutes longer than it needs to be. And I'm gonna rub your face in it. And I'm like, you know, the cool thing about those first Saw movies is there's some gore in them. There's some grossness, but they know right when to cut away. Like right when to give you a reaction shot, right when to just let you think about it. And it's almost like it goes on a little too long. And I strayed into this time with it. I caught myself actually laughing at this. And I'm like, that's the wrong reaction to be having. But this is playing like it's a big joke. Like it is a rubber doll being cut in half.
That's where it lingers too long is on the rubber doll. And if that was, and there were a few rubber doll points. I think there was a head that looked really realistic that he cut off one of the exterminator's heads. Mm-hmm. And I even thought, especially after Velocipastor, I was like, oh, look at this magnificent head. and then he pushed on it and it looked like a squished doll head. Yeah.
He pushed on it to pull the knife out and it kind of squashed a little too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little spongy. You know,
a little bit of overreach of the technical skills versus I think you've all made good points. He does linger on some stuff, some shots a little bit too long, and I feel like a lot of that's just inexperience.
I think that's his shtick. Yeah. I think I do because I'm not going to give anything away in the sequel, but there is another comparable scene in the sequel that even has a title, it's like in the Wikipedia article, it used to be under its own subsection, the scene. But
I just take you all back to that first Saw movie when Cary Elwes is like sawing his foot off.
Yeah.
We don't really ever see him do it. Like there's one shot where he drags that blade across that fake foot, and but you hear it. The thing that this movie does is that if they had shown him like start the cutter and then you just cut to the woman's face with blood splattering on you and you hear it, it would have been so much more visceral. Like it would have been so much more scary, because the thing about it, it's the same as when they pull the gun out. It's like, well, now you've just taken me out of the movie. That's my problem. I'm like, well, I know what you're going for, but now I'm like actively laughing at this because I know it's ridiculous.
And I think he has said in interviews, because they were getting ready to film the third one before the strike started, but he said he wants to make art scary again because he feels like people laugh more at him or have become so desensitized or comfortable with him that he wants to pull him back and make him more terrifying again. So we'll see if he does that with a third.
To quote John Doe from Seven, only in a world as shitty as this can we laugh at something like this. But I mean, no, really, though, like that's it's hard to put that back in the bag when you never even started it with it in that. Like, this movie's never been subtle. Like, there's nothing subtle about Terrifier at all. Like, that to me feels like you're going in a direction that you never set up to begin with. Now, I'm granted, I haven't seen the sequel, and I'm curious to see this third one. If they pull that off, more power to you, but I've never seen a horror series that decided let's go more subtle after they've just, you know, blown somebody's head apart. You know,
I wonder how subtle you could have even gone in the first one with a guy who doesn't talk or anything, who has to exaggerate his facial expressions and his movements and everything.
Right.
So subtle you can be.
This Saw scene, though, is very, it's a very Marx Brothers thing. Like, it feels like a Marx Brothers gag. Like,
fucked up Marx Brothers.
This is a fucked up Marx Brothers, but it could be.
He's got the Harpo horn.
Yeah, I mean, am I wrong? Thank
you. No, no.
Well, even the way he's presenting the body to Tara, who's tied up watching, like, he's like laughing and like pointing, like, oh, mm-hmm. See what I'm doing? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know,
it kind of made me think, Jay, you calling it calling back to the Marx Brothers made me think of the cabin in the ship where they just keep stuffing more and more people into it.
Yes, where it just becomes this, just how many more people can we put on that little set? Yes, same. Yes, it's very much in that same vein. And that's fine if the movie is going to play like that. What I'm arguing is that the movie's trying to do both things, and I don't think it can do that. I don't know that there's any narrative structure that can fit all of that in one. I mean, it's what happens in those later Nightmare sequels, or even in the Friday the 13th ones. You just start rooting for Jason to hack up all the people you hated in high school. Like, that's, you know, that's the problem. Like, is it, when you start siding with that, you no longer have an in with the audience. Like, well, I'll just say now, like, I wanted the Scream Killers to whack everybody in that last movie. I'm like, please let them win finally, because these people all need to go out hard. But, you know, if you've seen it, you know, that doesn't happen. So, I mean, I don't know that you can have it both ways like that. Like, and I'm trying to think of a horror movie where the villain actually won at the end and got away with it. This is one. I mean, he gets away. I mean, so he's definitely, you know, moving on, but
how did you, I was going to ask you, how did you feel about kind of going supernatural there at the end, like with him being resurrected?
I think Ron summed it right. There's definitely some bath salts involved or something. I mean, I don't know. I'm too desensitized a horror fan. Nobody's ever dead. Like,
that's why I was so surprised when, what's her face? When Tara actually showed up as dead, because she was billed as like the one that was going to make it to the end. And then we realize, oh no, it's actually her sister that's
she's
going to be the one that makes it.
She's definitely coded as the Marion Crane.
Mm-hmm.
Because Dawn is unlikable, and you know, Dawn gets what she deserves.
That's harsh.
Not necessarily. She may not deserve it.
Ooh, Ron. Hey,
you guys don't know what that puppet Dawn did.
Don't that at him.
That was a terrible puppet.
That's true. I'm with you there. So.
That puppet was like way worse than all those little Chucky puppets that get thrown into like the flamethrower or whatever.
The best Chucky death ever is in that second one where they basically just melt him into the fucking wax, man.
God, I forgot about that.
Yes, it's only to be taught by what they do in the third one, but so that second one's super gross. But
And I was also operating under the assumption that the pizza place guy was like the cousin of the pizza place guy from Do the Right Thing. Probably said lots of racism in his past.
He's Danny Aiello's random cousin.
So. Yeah, he's Manny Aiello, and he deserved it.
I think that pizza scene was more disturbing than anything in this movie, that he was having the chef clean up all the shit in the bathroom.
Honestly, all those that is the thing that felt like the most like egregious to me. Like, that was that felt just totally unnecessary. Like, you could have just thrown out Art out because he was a creep, or you could have just thrown Art out because he wasn't eating anything or buying anything. And you know, those guys have definitely thrown people out for not purchasing things, or thrown people out because they were the wrong color. Maybe
Art was the wrong skin color. Do I have some news for you? There is another shit scene in the sequel. You're welcome.
I'm with Ron on this. It's that Robbie effect again. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't know when to say no because I have no personal limits, so therefore no one else does. So, I mean, it's just gonna rub your back at it and hate that shit. I hate that as much as I hate the non sequitur music video cutaway bullshit that they throw in some of these movies sometimes. There's like someone drinking a goblet of blood wearing a pumpkin head for no fucking reason other than this weird shit in this movie with some Avenged Sevenfold going backwards behind it or something.
Now, if you worked for that pizza shop, wouldn't you expect more than time and a half if you were forced to clean up that bathroom? That's all I kept thinking. Oh, he was God. Like, I better be getting time and a half for this. Mm-hmm. I was like, time and a half? That's it?
Time and a half for $7.25 an hour? Yeah, sure, man.
Hey, as the one person on the show, I'm pretty sure who's the only person who's been a commercial cleaner, I'm going to tell you, they don't pay you time and a half for jack. You just do it and live with it. Thank God I never had to deal with that exactly, but I've dealt with some things, and we'll leave it at that. So,
I worked in a college bar. And there is a lot of shit that goes down.
Lindsay, you could write like a whole season of screenplays on that.
I probably could. Let's talk about bar golf, everybody.
Oh my goodness.
I also had to clean public toilets.
Okay.
In both the cafeteria and the library. And my God, the library.
Oh, okay. So I worked the 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. shift at the library, and we shut the computer lab down at 1. So from 1 to 2, they didn't trust me to shelve books, so I just had to walk around the third floor to just watch all the random shit people would do in between the aisles. I'm just going to leave y'all with that. But yeah, you know, if I didn't understand how children were made, I would have known it after that shift. I promise you that.
I have no stories comparable where I can relate to being underpaid to clean a bunch of crap.
I mean, I would have said get a room, but technically they did reserve the study room, so I couldn't say that anymore.
Oh, yeah, man. They're studying anatomy.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
So,
okay, so let's get back to this movie. Vicky the sister, does she work for anyone or no?
No, I'm just gonna say it now. No,
she's even thinner than like Tara and Dawn because she just kind of she's annoying. She's annoyed by her sister. She goes to college. She is a stick in the mud because she's not having any Halloween fun. And then she shows up to get like menaced by Art, who is probably the most developed character in the movie.
I'm going to tell you who she is in horror movie legend. She is Tina's blonde friend in Halloween 5. That's who this character is. Oh, Jesus. Totally there to be murdered in the barn. That's all she's there for.
I mean, she probably has to deal with the most debatable, the horrifying art thing with the Buffalo Bill shtick.
Oh.
I mean, it's scary enough if you see a serial killer man doing that, but then when he has a clown makeup on, like, and he's coming at you from the dark, that's creepy.
Here's one of the grossest, funniest things, and one of her best acting moments to me is when I can't even put this lightly, so buckle up, boys. When she is walking down the stairs, she's creeped back, you know, out. And she steps right on, I don't know what expletive I want to use to say vagina, but that's not the word I wanted to use. that's just what came out of my mouth. But she steps on it and she does this whole like motion because you see it. And I was like, did she just step on what I think she stepped on? And I backed the movie up just to slow-mo through it to make sure that she stepped on what I thought she stepped on. But like her her like dry heave, I thought was the funniest thing in the whole movie. Like, and also her best acting moment, in my humble opinion.
I'm going to agree with you on that, because I was trying to figure out, how am I going to talk about this scene in front of Lindsay? I'm just not going to bring it up. And then you did it for me. So this is why we're friends. And so, but I saw that and I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure she just stepped on a hoo-ha.
Snap.
So, yeah. I've seen a lot of things in horror movies. I've never seen that until now.
I know, so, me neither.
I was like, okay,
that's,
you know what?
I backed it up. I was like, this can't be right.
You know what? Balls in your court, Rob Zombie. Never seen you do that shit. So.
Well, and speaking of balls, that's a good segue. I appreciate that the tricycle scene came after this, and Art had the foresight to put his clothes back on before climbing on that bicycle, because that would have been really uncomfortable for that guy.
Yes. Yes. Agree.
Also, I feel like they missed out by not showing us Art's dick when he's parading around in the Buffalo Bill costume. I feel like if you're gonna
do
this,
he was wearing a sliced off badge while he was dancing around.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I needed him to do the tuck and do the Buffalo Bill situation.
Honestly, that is what I wanted. I think he was doing his best impression of it. But the only thing I could think of in my head was like, would you fuck me?
Yeah. You fuck me so hard. Yes. Like, yes. We were in the same headspace. Yes.
Even like dancing like him a little bit.
What? I mean, yes, it's a total riff to that. I mean, that's what they're obviously doing.
Dancing, flipping his hair.
I was there on? For it. It was really weird.
Was she a great big fat person?
Hey, Walker, you better get your noise over here while I step on my half-cut human.
I think the funniest death in this film for me, because of how random it was, was the exterminator's partner, and they were clearly like, we need to add like 2 minutes to this film to make it like a theatrical length. Right. So let's have this guy show up like, with 10 minutes to the end of the movie, and he gets killed immediately.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the gonzo part of this at this point. But can I say, for a movie that has gone so like outlandish with its nudity, the love scenes in this are incredibly like BYU. Like, I was like, well why are we holding back now? After all this, so I'm with you, Ron. I look, I've seen Rare Exports. I needed to see some elf dong. Where was that? What was happening?
Yeah, I didn't get any dong in this movie.
Let's all be adults here. The dudes need to give it up more. Okay, I'm just a monster.
I didn't even get not, to see not a just, butt. Oh no, I did get to see a butt. I did.
I was about to say, not to spoil anything for the second one, but you get Art butt and you get some dong in the second one.
Oh. Okay, so look, they learned their lesson. Now I know. Okay, there we go.
I mean, everybody knows that monsters are always scarier when they have visible genitals.
Can I tell you what would have been even scarier, though? No, if they had done like Ken doll with him or whatever, and he just had a bump. Like, wouldn't that not have been freakier? Like
Marilyn Manson style?
Yes. No, Marilyn Manson. Like, yes.
Like the robot boy from Silent Night, Deadly Night, the toy maker.
Yes. Yeah. If we had gone that route, yes, that would have been excellent. And that would have been even scarier.
That would have been
a castle freak situation where it's all deformed.
Right? If you did see Art's genitals, though, somebody should have said, the clown's got nards.
I want to do that movie so bad. I was just talking about
that. That's on the list. It's on the list. I promise we'll get to. Well, you know, one day we're going to have our Summer of Shane Black, and that'll have to just be a part of it. But anyway, I'm glad to know that they finally give up on that. But they don't do it in this movie, and therefore I'm like dinging it for it, because at this point, what are you holding back, man? Like, come on, like let's have it all here. And
you got to leave a little something for the sequel.
I don't think they knew they were getting one, man. Like, at this point, there's no way you could have known like this one's going to take off. So.
Well, the sequel, besides getting all of that, it has more plot. You do have a main character besides Art.
That's like going from the first Poison album to the second one, man. That just means they brought in people that can write. That's all that means.
But yeah, he just shows up to be a random death, and then we get another random death like at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm. With the morgue guy?
Yeah. How do you feel before we get there? How do you feel about Art deciding that he's now a cannibal and eating chunks off of Vicky's face while she's been, splattered with a pickup truck?
He's so chaotic already. I don't think it was a huge shock, but it did. The second he started doing it, that was the first moment when I was like, oh, maybe he's not totally. Maybe he's not like certifiably insane. Maybe he just is on bath salts.
Mm-hmm.
maybe both.
Yeah.
I mean, I assumed it didn't shock, like Lindsay just said, like he was so insane up to this point, it didn't surprise me. Like I wasn't like, oh my God, I can't believe he's doing that. I'm like, oh, well, that fits.
I just feel like Daniel Craig in Skyfall. What do you think? It makes you think it's my first time eating a face. You know, it's the same thing.
So, I do have to ask Jay and Lindsay, though, since you guys were anti-gun, how did you feel when the cops cornered him and he got really annoyed and just pulled out the gun and shot himself?
Oh, see, that I was like, okay, so now you suck on all kinds of levels, Art, because at least Michael Myers stood there and took six from the psychiatrist, you piece of shit. You had to go out like a wuss. Like, no, that pisses me off. Like, they never shot fucking Freddy because they knew better, right? But, you know, they shot Jason to hell. Michael Myers got about 180 rounds in his sorry ass. Like, he's like got a fucking platoon movie or something. He's Tom Berenger at the end of this. And then now you go out like that. Like, that is some bullshit. I was, if I had something to throw, I would have thrown it.
Yeah. And cops are not waiting that long to shoot.
No. Drop it, and on the T of it, the gun is gone. Like, every cop I know will tell you, like, if I'm saying drop, it's over.
as someone, my dad was a cop when I was young. He hasn't been for a very long time, but yeah, like you don't wait. You're always prepped. It might be different now. This was many decades ago, but
well, those cops did look a little young and inexperienced, but yeah, sorry to interrupt.
I mean, they're in New York though. Like, they're well trained. They
Roll up on a scene like that, oh, you just unloading and going, let the captain figure that shit out. Like,
I don't think cops are waiting that long to shoot.
Even after Art shot himself, they should have mag dumped into him.
Right. Yeah, just to be sure. It's the only way to be sure. You gotta nuke the site from orbit.
I love that piece of acting on his part, by the way, too. When he was cornered, you could just see the annoyance in his face, like,
ugh. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that though, because I caught that this time, that he looks like, oh damn it, I'm gonna have to do this whole resurrection shit again. And I'm like, does he know he's coming back?
No, and the filmmaker confirmed when he shoots himself, he has no clue he's coming back. So that was just him like, fuck it, I'm ending it.
Oh, okay, because that was not how I read it. I read it, and he's like, ah, fine, I'll do the rebirth again, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, it felt very much like in a Highlander movie when one of the, like, if a Highlander got in trouble and just shot himself to avoid prison.
Right, right. When Chucky gave up, you know, yeah. It was like, fine, I'm coming back later.
Interesting. So he didn't know.
He didn't know.
I have questions.
The sequel will...
I guess I'll watch. Well, it started playing through, Tubi, started playing through to the sequel, and the sequel picks right up where the first one leaves off. So I actually thought that there was more to the first one that I missed, and I was like, oh, shit, I thought it was over. And then I hit pause and realized it was in the second one, so...
Yep, picks right back up in that morgue.
That's cool, though. That doesn't... I mean, I like that.
Well, that's good to know. I mean,
the first 3 minutes I saw.
As we seem to be getting towards the end of the podcast, I will say that I will probably be watching Terrifier 2 just to see what else is going on.
I do have to ask you then, Ron. Okay. You and Jay have not seen Terrifier 2. So when you guys were giving me shit on the last Patreon recording about Art the Clown, oh, this fucking guy, this fucking movie, like Anthony constantly defending this, you hadn't seen it?
No, I was saving it because I figured at some point we'd end up doing it with you. So, and I mean, we were plotting how we could do this a long time ago. We just had to come up with the way to make it work. So, yeah,
this has been in the works for a while. I decided to use my deviousness for good instead of evil for once.
Right.
But speaking of doing things for a love of evil, now's the time on the podcast when we get to our final thoughts, recommendations, and popcorn ratings for Terrifier. Anthony, you are the Art the Clown of the podcast world. So
thank you.
Please,
please. I don't know if that's a compliment.
Yeah, wow. I could go a lot of ways.
How do you know what I do on my Saturday nights?
Just to see if you're pasty, but also hulking. And also from New York, so I figured, you know, why not?
Okay.
I figured cool. if Art talked, he would sound, you know, he would have a very similar accent to you. So, Anthony, what are your thoughts and whatnot for Terrifier?
I think this, look, I wouldn't say it's an amazing, like, horror movie. It's entertaining, though. And that's all I want out of my horror movies. But Art the Clown as a character in my mind is right up there with the classic slasher icons. And if he had a better movie with a bigger budget, I think audiences would embrace him in such a way as well. Holding out for three, since that's going to be the big budget one. And I think a studio is actually distributing that one. So we'll see. But yeah, I love it. I love this film, and I was so glad I got to talk about it with the three of you tonight. I'd give it a five popcorns, three popcorns. What is it? Five popcorns, it's a extra butter.
It's a rating of small.
How many times have you been on this damn show and you don't know what the rating is?
You guys threw me from the beginning. I've been discombobulated all night.
Fair, but.
I'm going to give you an extra large popcorn, all the trimmings on it.
Okay.
And I will say, watch the sequel because it's even. It has better production values. I can't say it's even better quality, but it has better production values.
More money for the crazy.
Okay, Lindsay, what do you have to say?
Don't make me go next. Okay.
I mean, I could. All right, Lindsay, stop. I don't see any reason for us to be doing Lindsay's final thoughts and recommendations right now. So we're going to go to Jay. Jay?
Thanks. Look. It was a lot more fun to talk about this movie with y'all than it is to watch it, okay? So I think this is the kind of movie you've got to watch with a group of friends that are like-minded and in the area, like that are down for this. Because I love that Anthony loves this movie. I'm always for people that love things, and bravo to that. I love my cheesy weird shit too, okay? I'm not going to lie, okay? But you cannot put this in the same breath as Michael Myers and even Jason or early Freddy. This is in Child's Play, Chucky, Leprechaun world. And you know what? As that, it's a lot of fun because it bridges enough into like Saw and Hostel land to give me some of that gore fix I want, but it's also just cheesy as hell. But then it's also, they make some just dumb decisions. Like the whole gun thing, I've ripped on it enough. It just messes with my head. And the fact that it goes out the way it does, I, the only thing that keeps this from me from just totally like just sinking this thing like the freaking new Titanic sub is is the fact that the end when we realize that the wraparound framing device is, I'm like, that's clever, that's smart. There's clearly some ideas here. I'm hopeful that with a little more money, maybe a studio somewhat involved, that the sequels will be, you know, even more better. So I think it's good. It's not the greatest thing ever, but you know what? It is fun, and it's not all that original, but it borrows the best things from stuff that it's stealing from. So I'm going to give it a good solid medium popcorn. I think it's fine in that realm.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready for my popcorn rating now.
You have to be ready because you're next.
I know. Nobody be mad at me. I'm just kidding. You can be mad at me. It doesn't matter.
I'm not going to be mad at anybody.
You're still my friend. Yeah, it was not... I had zero expectations going into this film. So the production value was already higher than I was expecting because the last movie I watched was Velocipaster. So it was starting from a good point. But yeah, there were some weird choices that really, really messed me up. The gun thing was one. All of the doors being locked and not like getting a sense of where it was, which I understand the choice because I think it was made to feel super chaotic, and it was, and that kind of worked. But I don't think it knew if it was trying to be a straight up like murder gore porn or a like comedy horror over the top thing. And it wanted both, but it didn't do either super well. And when Jay said Hostel, that I 100% agree. Hostel, I freaking loved that movie, but I only ever watched it in college, not sober, with a big group of people. So it was a super fun watch. And I think if I had consumed that in a similar way, I would like it more. But I watched it kind of in pieces, some at work, as you all know at this point, and a little bit the rest of it right before this. And so I'm going to give it a small popcorn with salt because it's made me thirsty for more. And I think I have high hopes for Terrifier 2 and 3, as Anthony has stated. But I already like Terrifier 2, honestly, within the first 3 minutes, because it does such a good job of seamlessly picking up where the first one left off. So high hopes. First one, we'll see. I'll try it again next year, maybe. with a group of people. We'll see how it goes.
And I am going to echo a lot of the things that Jay and Lindsay said. To me, horror comedy is the absolute hardest genre to pull off because there's never a good balance. It's either too funny or too scary, and it's really, really, the amount of bad horror comedies are myriad, and the amount of good horror comedies, they're like 10, at least to me. So to have someone decide, I'm going to make a what I can only assume is a deliberate choice to make a horror comedy type movie as a very early movie in his career is a very brave one. And say what you want to about Damien Leone as a writer, but, or even as a director, I feel like there is a lot of potential that I see. And I feel like this is the sort of thing that on the second movie or the third movie, it will really start to come together a little bit more. If he could have gotten, I don't know, 5 pages of notes from like a Ty West or somebody who's a little bit more established in horror filmmaking, who has gotten the, or even like a Larry Fessenden, somebody who's done like cheap, low budget New York horror, that could say, here's some things you should do, here's some things you should not do, here's some pitfalls to avoid because I did these. Larry Fessenden or Ted Kahagan or one of those dudes who make these kind of like no budget New York horror movies that are very city centric and feel very urban, for lack of a better word. I feel like if he had gotten just a few more pages of notes, or done like maybe 2 more rough drafts to get a little bit more distance from the last Rob Zombie movie he watched, which was probably 31.
Yeah.
I've seen other movies that are similar to this that I like more, like Haunt. I really enjoyed Haunt. It's very similar to this. It's got this very similar vibe to this, but I think it's a little bit more successful. because it seems to have a little better understanding of the space it wants to do, and it doesn't seem to be trying so hard to establish Art or any one solo character like Art as the focal point of a franchise. But that said, I'll give it a medium popcorn with extra butter. I did like the gun where no one else did because it took me by surprise. And I appreciate things that I appreciate people that are willing to go away from conventions and to make the choice to turn left where everyone else would turn right. It doesn't always work out. And in a lot of ways, it actually probably hurt the movie in some aspects, but I like the guts it takes to say, everyone says turn right, I'm going left. Here's why I'm going left. So I can appreciate that. So medium popcorn with some salt, with extra butter. If I remember what I'm saying, that'd be great. And, you know, we'll throw some salt on there too, because like Lindsay, I am interested to see the second one and to see where it goes. And I love that it picks up right away. So that's a cool thing to me.
Yeah, I guess real quick, I want Damian Leone to get like, I would love to see if they would hand him like the next Texas Chainsaw, because you know they're going to do another one. Yes. Like, I think he would thrive in that kind of environment, you know, like to do something like that. And that last one, just for the record, on Netflix, ain't half bad. It's kind of fun. But he's like, I could see
collaborating
him
collaborating with Sam Raimi on something.
Okay, see, that's the right kind of move too. Yeah. Yes. Somebody like Sam Raimi could go like, you know, I see what you're trying to go for, but here's how we need to get that done, because Sam Raimi knows their chance that. So yeah, good call.
Yeah, Sam Raimi is the master of this kind of movie, I feel like.
Yeah.
And I feel like if somebody had handed him a script that he could rewrite, like that was a good script that he could rewrite, I think that would have helped things too. But go ahead, Anthony.
I was just going to say, I still love all three of you. You're still my friends. No, I understand exactly where all three of you are coming from. But it's still, it does make me happy that you guys are interested enough where you will watch the sequel at some point. Mm-hmm. And hopefully have me back on to cover it. Not under the guise of Killer Clowns Matter.
Yeah, I don't think we can do that again. That was a one-time trick, but yeah.
No, the next time we're going to tell you to watch, what's that movie where all the people dissolve because they drink tainted malt liquor?
What?
I don't know that one, but I'm interested.
This was actually just a really weird dream that Ron had.
No, it's a real movie that was also shot in like New Jersey in a junkyard.
I think you're talking about Garden State, and that's
yeah. Listen to this; it'll change your life. And he puts the headphones on, and it's just like, shrieking.
There you go.
No. Anthony, now that you've introduced us to the world of Terrifier, why don't you introduce our audience to...
Wait a minute. Real quick. You're talking about the 1987 movie Street Trash.
I am talking about Street Trash. Yes, thank you.
That's what you're... I knew it, and Google helped me finish the thought.
One of the best movies ever where, spoiler alert, somebody plays football with a severed penis.
Well, I think next October is set.
Yeah. So. I was about to say that there's a dong that Lindsay missed in this movie.
This is currently only streaming on something called Night Flight, so good luck.
You can't watch it.
I've got a bootleg copy that I downloaded when Joe Bob did it on the last drive-in. So I've got everybody's back. I've got that.
All right. So it's like me with that for last season. You've got us covered.
I've got that. I've got the stuff. I've got society. We can do
stuff.
A splatter. We can do a splatterpunk theme next Choctober.
Stuff I think is either on Shudder or Tubi. I've seen it roaming around. So.
But yeah, I've got your back for all your melted homeless person.
Yeah, please do pitch it back to Anthony. Talk about his wholesome Christmas podcast, because it's so fits.
Anthony, tell us about your mostly family-friendly podcast when we don't talk about
no one and- curses, and this is the most X-rated version of Film Strip ever.
I feel honored I'm on the most X-rated version.
And we've covered Basic Instinct and Eyes Wide Shut. I want everyone to know.
my co-hosts of my other podcast would expect nothing less of me than being on the X-rated version.
Well, probably they, us.
Well, they are, what was the term?
Bathing in their virginity.
Bathing in their virginity, yes. They got a particularly good Google review one, or iTunes review where Tom and Julia were accused of bathing in their virginity, despite the fact Julia's got like five friggin' kids.
They have enough kids to have like a basketball lineup between the two of us. Anyway,
yeah, so I host a year-round Christmas podcast. It's a podcast a lot more family-friendly than what you just heard here. Every Monday, we review a new Christmas movie, TV show, TV episode of a popular show, etc., etc. And you can find us by searching Tis the Podcast. Every October, we do Halloween films. Jay and Ron are coming on this year to talk Black Christmas and Freddy vs. Jason. Jay, Ron, and Lindsay are going to do a Patreon episode this year with us, the horror 2023 horror bracket, to decide the ultimate scary movie, which I'm really excited about. And I'm glad all three are coming on for that. So, yeah, check us out.
And if you want to hear Anthony talk more about Terrifier, check out the Tis the Podcast Patreon. Because I believe he and Julia are, what are you calling it, Anthony? Something about Ruiner or something?
So there is a horror podcast me and Julia love called Ruined, where two friends, one who loves horror movies, one who hates them, they do a different horror movie every week, with the one friend just watching the trailer and the other friend walking them through the movie beat by beat, while the one who didn't watch the movie tries to guess the twists and turns and reacts and everything. So for Halloween this year, me and Julia did Terrifier as a Ruined episode, because she'll never watch it. And her reactions are quite funny as I walk her through this X-rated film beat by beat. So check it out.
Her reactions to the normal movies you guys watch are really funny. Her reaction to something like this is going to be just priceless.
I am very, the episode turned out very well. I'm excited to do the second one on Wednesday with her. So.
And speaking of things that turned out well, that's about it for this episode of Filmstrip. You can follow the show's social media at Filmstrip Pod on all the things. There you will find announcements about upcoming shows, many, many posts on our Facebook page about movies that came out 30 or 40 or 10 or 15 years ago, whatever movie came out on the day. I'll find a way to make a post
that we covered 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah. And you'll also find a link to our Letterboxd page, which is in dire need of updating, but it contains a list of all of our reviews, and at some point it will do that again. Go to filmstrippodcast.com to link to our distribution site, where you could find us on your podcast platform of choice, Apple, Spotify, Google, whatever, any place pods are casted, you can find our pod being casted. Please share the show, and if you can, leave us a positive review, as it helps other people find the podcast. It's good for the algorithm. God knows we need to feed that beast. For Lindsay, Jay, and Anthony, I'm Ron. Thank you for listening to Filmstrip.
Thank you for listening to Filmstrip. You can find more episodes on our website, filmstrippodcast.com. The Filmstrip theme music is produced and performed by Frozen Lake 121. All content used or discussed in these podcast episodes is the property of the respective owners and used under the Fair Use Act, Section 504(c)(2), Title 17.